Hold on, they're going to get to the chorus really quick here, though. I didn't realize this was a 30-minute song.
Music.
Pictures podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me always is Mark.
Pretty sure that marriages in a wedding chapel are considered legal.
And Erica.
Watching this movie makes me realize I should have smoked more when I was pregnant. Ugh, knew I was doing something wrong. Damn it.
I like that you said more, though, so it didn't rule out.
Yeah, you didn't have a grit
there
here and there.
There was a little bit going on.
And welcome to another episode in our March Madness 2 Let's Get Nuts series, where we're talking not about the sports movies released by New World Pictures, but the movies that go a little bit crazy, and nothing's going to get crazier than 1975's Crazy Mama.
The rock and roll 50s. Ike was on the golf course and the Big Bopper was on the charts. Nixon called Khrushchev a commie. Blasey had pups and Elvis was drafted. Crazy, man, crazy.
I'm gonna tell you right now, you're not gonna beat the system.
You can if you take them by surprise. Hit when I don't expect it.
Okay, rob a bank. Let's you and me take a walk to the vault. Giddy up.
You think I'm going to let you rob my bank?
Take the money. Take all the money.
They'll have the FBI after us.
Well, shoot, the way we're going, you know, they're liable to call out the Marines.
Drop those guns, lady.
Cheryl, I don't want to be an outlaw.
Let's do something that'll make us both feel real good.
I cannot believe what's happening here. Look at this. And the really weird thing is I'm not even mad.
Best things in life are free, but you can give them to the present bees. I need fun.
Cruising America in 57, they blasted their way to rock and roll heaven. Oscar winner Cloris Leachman, Stuart Whitman, Ann Southern, Jim Backus, and the Goodyear Blimp. Crazy Mama, it's a blast from the past.
Mike, that's right. 1975's Crazy Mama, brought to you by Nickel Slots. Remember us? We're nickels. We're coins that are still being made. And not only that, we can entertain with Nickel Slots, where the buy-in is cheap and so is the payout. So if you're looking to make it rich, try something else. But if you want to have fun and get rid of a bunch of unnecessary change, try Nickel Slots.
Yeah, I used to play a lot of nickel slots back in the day in Vegas because even though there really wasn't a payout, you were going to just slowly lose money.
Yeah.
They still served you beer.
Yeah. They.
And I thought, this is just a way to very cheaply get beer.
Yeah, but continue to still be giving the casino small amounts of money.
Just very small amount. It was more like tip money was going into
it. And it felt like you were you were evening the score just a little
bit. I felt like I was gaming the system, to use a pun. Sure, but I was like, oh, I found the loophole here.
Yeah.
I'll play nickel slots.
This one is directed by Jonathan Demme in his second directorial effort for New World. At the time, Demme was preparing actually to direct a different movie, Fighting Mad, which was going to be for 20th Century Fox with Corman producing. And actually, who they had in his place is they actually had an Oscar-nominated documentarian, Shirley Clark, who was set to direct the movie. And producer Julie Corman explains in Volume 2 of New World Pictures, An Oral History, she said, I loved Shirley Clark, but she was totally bamboozled by fast production. You know, we're going to have a 15-day shoot. You've got to make all the decisions with the locations and all that. People on the crew started coming and saying, we can't get answers out of Shirley, and we don't know what to do about it. Everyone was really kind of struggling with her work. There's a perception that I fired her. That's not really what happened. I called her in and said, Shirley, you seem really uncomfortable and really unhappy here. And she said, yeah, it's not what I do. Which still seems like you fired her, Julie. No offense, but I mean, you did fire her. In fact, they fired her with after like a month or so of work with about 10 days before the shoot. And by the way, when we spoke to Alan Holzman, who edited this movie, he told us that Clark was fired because she went to a dentist appointment instead of a casting session. And that's when Julie said, you're out.
Well, listen, when you have a cavity or you need to get a root canal, you don't mess around. There's no casting session that's going to supersede the pain.
That's right.
Of
as you well know, things. As you well know,
as having... I well know, yeah, never having a cavity, but having a few root canals in my life,
root canal,
yeah,
it's no fun to have that kind of pain,
nope.
And we're assuming it was that severe. If it was like a cleaning, maybe we see Julie's point a bit more,
right?
But this is the time they feel like it's a dentist appointment. You couldn't maybe push it out one day.
Yeah,
I don't know. Counterpoint. I mean,
if she's having that kind of serious pain, you got to get in there as soon as possible if it's an emergency.
Also, maybe this is that cleaning when they do the X-rays, because that's kind of a bigger cleaning that time. So you want to make sure you get.
I just
imagine
someone going in and being like, "Okay, well, I think your audition was just great, and I'd like to see." You again, maybe you could do it with a different accent.
Did you just go to the dentist?
No,
that's tomorrow. This was important that I be here today.
Also, you know, if you are really badly needing a new toothbrush, you know, getting to the dentist is critical. This is, this is the mid-70s.
I like to choose dentists based on what kind of goodies you get at the end. Like, if I leave and there's no goodie offering, no, like, trial floss, no free soft bristle toothbrush, forget it. I won't be back.
Every time we went to our dentist, Mark and I, our family dentist, they had a little treasure chest. And at the end, you got to get a little treasure. And every time I was like, dude, I can't wait to get that treasure chest. And then they would open up said treasure chest. And you were like, oh, yeah, it's just a bunch of shit.
But just knowing that
it was there was enough. It did the job.
It was the kind of shit that, like, if you saw at a Chuck E. Cheese, you would say, wow, that's shit.
Yeah, you're like,
and they are notorious for 500 terrible. Tickets for shit.
You're like, that's 50 tickets? Yeah. Like, oh, man. Okay.
Man, I got a tooth extracted without Novocaine, and all I got was this fucking fake witch finger. It's like a green finger with a red finger.
Just one.
Just one, not even five.
Yeah. So,
if you get a root canal, you get a wacky wall crawler, which is pretty good.
I was going to say, what about those little sticky hands where you like whap it on the wall and it has like just a hand and just sticks and you peel it off and then it comes back and hits you and then you're like, ew, gross, sticky.
No, it doesn't stick anymore because it got your shirt fuzz on it. You're like, nah,
yep.
It ruins it.
Lasts like five good thwaps and then it's done.
Thwaps!
So yes, so Jonathan Demme gets thrown into the mix in this movie, and I think that's important to bring that up top because I feel like it, as we go through the movie, it shows itself. By the way, this is also written by Robert Thom, who wrote Death Race 2000, but it's based on a story by New World Story editor Frances Dole, whose husband Clinton Kimbrough actually plays Papa Stokes.
Well, not for long.
Yeah, and it does not last. It's not a very large role, but any case, and she
meaningful
had,
though.
Frances had actually done the very first draft for I'm going to get to that in a second. Anyway, here's the quote from Demme from Mind Warp, where he talks about the script. Oh, when he got word from Corman, Demme got word from Corman that he was going to take over. He said to the Austin Chronicle that Roger told him, "There's a casting session in half an hour. Find all the locations. And by the way, the cast hates the script." And Demme said, "Look, Roger, I must read the script before I agree to do this." And Roger said, "Absolutely not enough time for that."
Wow.
And that's the point where he said, okay, he wanted his wife at the time, Evelyn Purcell, he wanted her to direct the second unit. So he said, if she does the second unit, I'll do it. And she did.
Yeah. He's like, I need something out of this.
Yeah, you got to give me something because I love, absolutely, there's no time for that.
Feel like I'm walking into a train wreck. Yes, I know, Roger. There's a lot of train wreck, or there's a lot of car wrecks in this movie. But I'm walking into a train wreck. Give me something. I need something to walk away from.
I can imagine Roger too saying that, like, absolutely not enough time for that. You're like, oh.
I was just gonna read it on my lunch break. Oh yeah, like I don't think it's not that thick of a script.
Nope. Half an hour. Got a cast. Unbelievable. This stars Cloris Leachman, who is amazingly 1 year removed from Young Frankenstein.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was wondering where this fit. I naturally assumed that Young Frankenstein came after.
Me too, when watching this, because I was like, man, Cloris Leachman's kind of a fox here. But no.
You get a little titty peek
and a cheek, a butt cheek. But this
not
is
a kidding. It's not a titty count, but maybe it's like a titty nod, titty note.
Yeah, a little. Hey, there's
titty wink. Tiddly. Is that where tiddly winks came from? Is this where it originated?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Leachman family has been living off the rights of that ever since Crazy Mama.
Yeah. When the guy said, hey, when you said tiddlywinks last week, I made a game out of it. And he was like, whoa. The wives are here. What are you doing? He's like, no, it's for kids. He's like, oh, that's what kind of,
weird.
What did you,
what a weird,
and what yeah, game is it?
Not a game.
Do you remember what we were talking about? I mean, anyway. But this is also, she's 4 years removed from winning the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for The Last Picture Show, directed by Peter Bogdanovich, who got his start with New World. According to the commentary on the DVD Blu-ray, which is with Corman and Jonathan Demme, they were saying that they felt this was Leachman and her attempt to really show what she could do with the lead role. She was also on TV at the time as well. And certainly her presence sold the film well, as it was a success for New World, but also there was other people in the cast as well that probably also helped sell the film. Here's where you can watch the movie. It is on Tubi.
Tubi.
Shout TV. YouTube. You can also, as I said, you can get the Shout DVD, or there is a Blu-ray of Crazy Mama alongside The Lady in Red. But now it's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Crazy Mama about?
Crazy Mama is about a cross-country drive. And not just any cross-country drive. It's a drive that if you follow the right route from Long Beach, California, into Arizona, over to Las Vegas, and all the way to Arkansas, and if you follow a little bit off the beaten path, every town, hillside, country road will look just like Greater Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're going, the collective we, all of us on this podcast right now, not you listeners, just us.
Oh, we're heading. They were like, we're all going on a trip.
Hold your ears, listeners. Yeah. Stop listening, listeners. This is how we get listeners, by saying stop listening.
Yeah, don't you dare.
That's how we hook our audience.
Don't you dare.
Plug your ears. This next part's not for you, listener.
So, the collective we are going to be heading to, in May, to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're not at Final Questions, but what city and or greater Los Angeles area rural neighborhood do you think Arkansas will look like? I'll start. I'm picturing Eagle Rock because I just feel like that's what it's going to look like. Mm. But what do you think Arkansas is going to look like?
Mm.
Well, if it looks like this movie, and then it will look like Paris, California, where this was shot. Which we will get to in the research.
Oh,
but
wait. He cheated. He already knows.
There was stuff shot in other places, too.
Sure.
I saw a little bit of Joshua Tree in there.
It's a little bit
I was going to say, I was going to say Joshua Tree or, Palm Desert area, where it's, a little bit more, not as busy. Vocab is my friend. You don't need to stay in school, kids, to do a podcast because you can say things like not as, very busy. So there you go. Actually, you should stay in school.
Yeah.
See
it through. See it through.
That.
You've already started.
Yeah, see it through to the end.
See it through to the end. Why not? Erica, what is this movie about?
I thought this movie was a really neat look at a creative way to do a road trip.
Hmm.
It doesn't always have to be about planning. It's not always about mapping out the route. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the road trip unfolds while you're in it. And you got to get creative and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, this was a very stressful road trip. And I did not appreciate the creativity that was exhibited by the characters and how they accomplished this road trip. I found it very nerve-wracking at times. But I think that's what it was. I think it was just a creative attempt at getting a real low-cost road trip.
That it was. Yeah, keep your destinations far apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's helpful.
And also, again, I know I've said this before about other movies, about what they're about. When you're cute, you can really get away with a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
Mm.
And I say that as somebody who's just so fucking cute. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen me, but I'm pretty cute. Like, I'd probably be able to get away with, like, tons of the shenanigans they got away with here, because I'm pretty cute. You know what I mean? So I get it.
Really took on that mouth breather persona.
Yeah.
Cute.
Well, for me, this movie was about if you ever do get married, don't skimp on the wedding photos.
Purchase them.
Go ahead and purchase them and get them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And get those neggies too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Get those neggies. cookies.
Get those.
Oh, God. And I will also challenge you, Ryan, to say that you have been married, and we did skimp on wedding photos.
Yeah, and it was a bit of a mistake on them, on our parts.
We did not get the neggies, and yikes. Yikes.
Yeah. But let's go to the Letterbox synopsis. This is what Letterbox says about Crazy Mama, so give us a follow there if you dare. Melba Stokes, her mother Sheba and daughter Cheryl embark on a crime spree after their California beauty parlor is repossessed. Not bad so far.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Accurate.
Their destination is Arkansas, where the three generations of women want to reclaim the family farm. Wow. That's impressive. Hey, that's impressive.
People note. Take a note. This is how you do it.
Yep.
100% accurate.
Who do they bring in? Who do they bring in for this? Give them a raise. This movie was originally actually announced to be Big Bad Mama 2 in early 1975. Big Bad Mama coming out in 1974. Which was itself... Big Bad Mama, that is, an update on Corman's early film, Bloody Mama, from, I believe, 1970. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the thing you exploit is your own past success. So.
Oh, shit. That's deep.
Yeah.
That's deep.
And sometimes you just return to that well.
I'm more than
again
just cute. I'm also brains.
How do you define past success, though? I'm still working on that one.
Bloody Mama was a hit, so he made Big Bad Mama. That was a hit, and so now he said, "Let's do Crazy
Mama."
Two
hits in a row.
This
doesn't help or add anything. I fucking hate the title Bloody Mama. Just putting that out there. I hate it. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Yeah,
that's it. That adds nothing. But I'm cute, so I can fucking get away with it.
You're killing me with that.
It's the dumbest bit, but I'm sticking to it.
So Francis Dole, having come up with the first script of Big Bad Mama, she creates the story for Crazy Mama, and she said it was going to be a bit different, as she told Stephen Armstrong and New World Pictures Oral History Volume 2. She said Roger wanted it to be light like Big Bad Mama, but it'd be a team of women rather than men in the mix as Big Bad Mama did. Only it did have men in the mix there, Francis.
Yes.
Did you see the end result?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Yeah.
All due respect to someone who was a huge part of New World, but there's men in the mix here. There definitely is. This does take place in the 1950s and not the 30s in Prohibition, because this is actually, this time, about a hairdresser and her mother who get into trouble after not paying their rent. But just in case you forgot about Bloody Mama or Big Bad Mama, we start in a flashback in the 1930s where we find out that the Stokes women have always had money troubles, dating back to when Daddy Stokes was shot when he was evicted from his land.
Normally when you evict people, you don't come in guns a-blazing.
Yeah, you don't draw your guns, like, get out.
Sure.
Yeah.
You don't even normally bring them. You just kind of show up.
You've
been evicted.
Yeah, you have to leave now. So, yeah.
But,
all right. It's a little less violent when we're in the 50s with Mama Stokes and Melba, and they're being evicted decades later here in clip one.
Oh, no, Mr. Albertson. I plainly told you I'd have the money next Tuesday.
Yeah, but what you forget is that it is next Tuesday. No, it's not my choice, but you're 3 months behind on your payments.
Oh, I have more. $29.
Yeah, for $429, maybe we could talk, sweetheart. Look, fellas, come on, let's get everything out of here. No, business is business.
Crooked business. Anyway, ever no, make my
please,
payment.
Please, Mrs. Stokes.
No. Hey, take back your rotor. No, don't. Keep still that ride. Stay down there. Keep stopping. Don't get wet.
Ah, the kind of hearing.
That's, by the way, Jim Backus as a landlord. That is Mr. Magoo to some, and Mr. Howell from Gilligan's Island to others, depending on which era you grow up in.
Oh, yes! I was like, where do I know this guy from? They know so many guys. I'm so fucking cute. So it's, like, hard to keep them straight. You know what I mean?
Or
Ryan, no offense, but you get it.
I get it. Of course I do. Oh, if you happen to be a young, you go, who and who? And who is the guy? So, yeah.
I'm cute, but I'm not a young. I'm not a liar. Not a young.
And also that clip brings up, I think it was important to establish, because this is how this movie is early on. Like, when things get nutty, the sound just sort of comes together and just blends into one sound.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 10 minutes of this movie is a lot of talking and zero conversation. It's just people talking over people for 10 fucking minutes.
And you're like,
this is why I don't go to parties. Because it's just a lot of talking.
And this is, you know, Roger Corman generally would do a sound mix of like a day, maybe two, but and this needed some tweaking on the old audio.
Everyone is at the same high-pitched tone talking as loud as they can. And it's like, you can't understand what's going on.
Well, now, to be fair, like, I know that how, when we spoke to Alan Holzman, the way he edited the movie together was to use a lot of the second unit footage and a lot of different takes. He liked to cut it up. But what Jonathan Demme was shooting the movie for was often to just shoot it kind of in a take. So you can kind of understand why everyone's going for it so hard. And once they're in like one take, the clip we just sent was like a single shot, right? And they maybe cut to Ann Southern, who plays the mom. They might cut to her because she happened to be an actress who insisted always on getting a close-up always, Jonathan Demme said in the commentary. So he always had that. Alan would have always had that to cut to. But so Jonathan Demme was thinking, I'll get it all in one shot. But then you get like several actors who are all at 11 who are like, this is the shot. And also you're not doing tons of takes. So you got to give it your all every time. So, but That's what this movie is, a little bit in a nutshell.
That's showbiz, baby. That's showbiz.
That's the biz.
It's the biz. That's it.
They do steal the landlord's car, and they drive off all three generations of Stokes women, with Melba's daughter Cheryl joining in. Cheryl is played by Linda Pearl, who had appeared in a couple episodes of Happy Days. Much like the actor who plays her boyfriend Sean, Donnie Most, best known for playing Ralph Mouth on Happy Days. And Linda Pearl, at the time, had only played, like, Richie's, like, a date for Richie in a couple episodes. But by the last season, she plays Fonzie's girlfriend for, like, the entire season. Two roles in that. Driving away in Mr. Howell's car, Melba, though, has an idea of where they should go next.
What the heck are we gonna do now?
You need a home, baby. That's what you really need. Any one of your dads would have made a home for you with grass and trees, real trees, oak trees, mountains.
That's right.
I'm gonna get it all for you, baby. We're going back to Jerusalem, Arkansas.
What the heck for?
I'm gonna buy back our farm.
What?
I'm gonna buy it with good, solid, honest cash so nobody can never take it away from us again.
You got any idea where we're gonna be tonight?
Yes, we're gonna be in Las Vegas.
Now, Melba, just hold up here. Now, you're traveling too fast.
We're going to buy back a Stoke 60 acres. Cotton, soybeans, chickens, pigs, horses, mules. Mama's going to sell eggs and milk.
That's a lot for a farm. That's a lot for 60 acres. That is a lot. Soybeans, cotton, you got cows, you're going to be selling milk, you got chickens. That's a ton. That's a ton going on.
That's a lot for three people to manage.
Yeah, that's a ton.
But just really quickly, was Linda Pearl the girlfriend who had the daughter that was played by Heather O'Rourke from Poltergeist?
Yes.
Is that the one?
Yes, I think.
Because that was
right
after, was it Pinky Tuscadero was the girlfriend before that?
Oh.
And then it was Leather before that, if I'm remembering correctly.
Wow.
Was that off the bro dome?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Wow.
Yeah, you know what, kids? When you grow up without cable or the internet, suddenly...
I could be wrong about that.
Suddenly but... you gave a crap about, you know, shows set in eras you did not live. They do go to Vegas, and that is where they meet one of the most important characters in the entire movie, and that is Bertha, played by Mary Earle, who had also appeared in New World's Summer School Teachers. I did not get a better runner, but I was trying to find a runner of her. This is the best I have.
That money's just hummingbird doo-doo.
You did also her dirty. You did her but dirty. How dare she, you?
She also proves, Erica, that you can, not that you're at her level, but you can be an old and still get the youngs, is what she proves by the end of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She still got it.
I'm listening.
So
or you can be an old and still get the olds, right, Ryan?
Mm-hmm. I happen to love her in this movie, though. I loved her in this movie. I thought Bertha was the absolute best, and I was so happy she was in this movie. I loved her in this movie, and I just thought she was great. But we also had a couple other characters to the mix. Melba's new beau, Jim Bob, played by Stuart Whitman from last week's Maniac. And this time,
so is this? Are we just going to watch Stuart Whitman movies after this?
I think we've done it. We've done this.
This is the Stuart Whitman podcast now.
This is the Stuart
Whitman. Forget everything else you've heard.
There has got to be a way that Demonoid is a nearly new world in some way. I feel like we can make that
okay.
work.
Okay, we'll see what we can do. We'll see what we can do. But I think we have kind of gone through his new world without. Even not thinking we were going to. I think we've kind of gone through his New World movies.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
But we're introduced to his character at a craps table full of people, dealers and players, who have never played the game of craps ever in their life. It was the most infuriating thing to watch because they are breaking all the rules. Playing craps, and this is he asks Clarice Leachman's character,
not Cloris
Leachman's.
I love Clarice. Hello, Clarice. This is gonna upset listeners. I've never seen Best Picture show, but I have seen Silence of the Lambs. So go back, look at one of our convince me's.
Yeah, we talked about Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
Mark.
And then maybe one day we'll do a convince me on Last Picture Show, and I'll watch whatever the hell that is. Anyway, continue.
So he is introduced by having her kiss the dice. And he rolls it. Now, first of all, he rolls it with his hands like this. I know this is a podcast and you can't see my hands, but I'm cupping them together right around shoulder level. You can't do that at a craps table. Got to keep the hands below the top of the craps table.
That's right. You have to keep them in the table.
Also, when dice
Otherwise,
are
Otherwise, the magnets don't work.
Right. Also, when you dice are out, you can't have your hands dangling over the wall of the craps table. People lose their shit if you do that. They will get seriously pissed at you. But
Vegas doesn't like a dangle.
They don't like a dangle. They do not. It's considered bad luck. Anyway, he throws it and then he goes, yeah, what did he hit? Now, the stick man would have said exactly what he hit, but the stick man doesn't. And he just says, you're good luck. For what? I don't know. Was he playing on the not come line and he threw a seven and so he won all the money? We'll never know. But these are people. And then in between, everyone's trying to hand cash, like by hand. You put the cash on the felt, then they will turn those into chips. You don't just hand the dealers cash. That's not how it works in Vegas. Anyway, it was infuriating to me.
By the way, I was wrong. There is one other New World movie that has Stuart Whitman eaten alive. Toby Hooper's eaten alive.
What?
Yeah.
This is a win-win. One,
wow.
We found another movie, which I'm excited about. And two, my story was so boring that Ryan got to do a little real-time research while I was talking.
No, it was not boring. I just wanted to double check. I was double checking myself because I was like, I said we're done, and I'm clearly was wrong. Also, he was.
Think I'm playing some half-assed motherfucking game?
I mean, apparently I was with my research. I did not look enough. He also was in a movie called Shatter in 1974, which is also was co-directed or partly directed at least by Monty Hellman. Should we ever go into a series of Monty Hellman for Corman's Graduates, we might talk about that one as well. And he was also in The White Buffalo. If we could make that one a nearly new world, I don't know how on earth we ever could. But that is a Charles Bronson movie, which is a blast. I don't know how we could ever do it, but I don't know. That would be a huge stretch. But anyway, moving on with the movie. Also, another addition to the whole crew, Snake, who is a greaser that they pick up, who is played by Brian England, who is Cloris Leachman's son. Not Clarice Leachman. She never had children.
Super different. Super different person.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that.
That is one of her five children. What they do find very quickly in Vegas is that their luck does not last. So they decide to come up with another plan of how they are going to make money to get this robust farm that they are planning.
Hold it, everybody. One at a time. This is a business meeting. We're going to do it right. Okay, ladies first.
Mama.
Okay, rob a bank. What we fooling around for?
I got a surefire way to beat the house.
Both the safe from one of the big hotels. We get thousands of dollars in jewelry alone.
That's a rotten idea. How about starting one of those chain letters?
That's really for the birds, man.
Hey, listen, that's penny ante stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to beat the system.
You can, if you take them by surprise. Hit when I don't expect it.
That's how they keep getting us.
Well, sure, honey, but buying and supplying a farm takes a mighty big parcel of money.
How about one of those 24-hour wedding chapels?
Which is what they do. And
that's your girl suggesting a 24-hour She's kind of, mm-hmm. She's pretty, like, kind of revealing that she was like a baddie back in the day, right? She's the first one. They find her in a casino gambling. Then she's like, oh, I don't know, a 24-hour chapel? As if she doesn't know what it is. Come on. Right. She probably went there herself. Total baddie.
Which one of those plans do you think sounded best? They do settle on the wedding chapel, but were there other ones that you thought that maybe they should have done?
Chain letter. Definitely go with the chain letter.
I think that would have been huge. They could have stayed in the hotel. It would have taken a lot less work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would have been a way more boring movie, though.
Did you check the mail? More letters!
Watching things play out as they write letters from the hotel.
That's
probably what Best Picture show's about. I don't need to see that shit twice.
Got all these letters. Oh, cool. Well, now what? Now we wait.
Yeah. That's probably a movie.
It probably is.
I'm sure of it. People are like, whoa, Oscar.
Instead,
Isn't there the... hold on. Jerry and Marge Go Large is basically the same thing where they just go and keep buying lottery tickets and counting them.
Mm.
That's roughly the same idea.
It's roughly.
Roughly. And roughly, Alfredo Zacharias, who directed Demonoid, wrote The Bees.
Yes, he did. And directed it. He ended up directing it.
So
saying the name
I'm
wrong. It's
saying,
the Bees!
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay.
There's a there's a thin thread between... Audience, I just want to watch Demonoid. I just want to talk about it. That's
just
all
to,
I'm trying to
you're
do
like,
here.
Hey, I can't
know,
wait
Mark,
to get
like,
through this episode so we can get
to
something
watch,
I wanted
will
to.
Will you watch it? I don't know. We can't rely on you for movies that we're supposed to be watching.
Yeah.
You've proved
I watched this one.
Multiple occasions.
We're like, hey, everybody, we're going to talk about Demonoid. Ooh, I watched Demons.
Ooh. Oh, darn it. Yeah, it's either Demons or The Void. Either one, I'm going to get it wrong.
So they do go to the wedding chapel, and that's where Melba marries Jim Bob, a man she just met at the beginning of so many classic love stories, especially in Vegas.
It's the eyebrows. Mm-hmm. Some ladies have a thing for dudes with eyebrows.
With mm-hmm. several eyebrows. He had eyebrows on top of eyebrows.
So much so that she shampoos them when she's, like, washing his hair.
And his chest. I was like... And you can use soap.
Mm-hmm. Also, I don't think those are the areas you should be hitting. If you're going to give someone a sponge bath.
Yeah. You get under the pits.
I think there's some other spots you should be paying more attention to.
Yeah. But. She was like, you can get the naughty bits.
Yeah.
Maybe he had really stinky eyebrows.
Sure. Oh. Reeked. They reeked. The backstory to Jim Bob becomes a bit of a subplot because his wife, played by Sally Kirkland, she's trying to hunt him down with the help of Dick Miller, who shows up as another cop, and they're trying to, you know, because the gang decides that they're a crime spree. They go on a crime spree, and they rob a grocery store and a dirt bike race and a bank, but that isn't somehow enough. And so they decide that Jim Bob decides they should kidnap him for money, and mm-hmm. that is how they get the wife involved, and then we have a lot of scenes with her as well. But this is them and their kidnapping scheme of Jim Bob.
Howdy.
Hello.
Look at here, boy. Mayor Jim Big Bob Trotter, Steamhead, Texas. Also happen to be the sheriff of Gazula County. I like this fair state of New Mexico. I want you people to know that. I'd like to spend some time here. It's peaceful, quiet. No phone calls. No crazy phone calls of any kind. Like to rest my nerves. Now, you got that or don't you got that?
Yeah, I know that.
Okay. I want you to rip that phone out of my room, you hear? And if my wife calls, I want you to... Oh, my God. What's going on? What the mother?
Oh, come on!
You want to let this happen? Hey, you going to stand around and do nothing?
Hell, man, you on your own.
Oh, come on! You on your own, man.
Now, lost in the shuffle of this little scheme is the fact that an actor makes his debut. I'm talking about Dennis Quaid and his on-screen debut. It's his first on-screen role as a bellhop in this scene. In fact...
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, here is a clip of him on the Storytellers podcast talking about his very first on-screen role.
I had just been in L.A. for like 2 weeks in 1975. I went with my brother to a Jonathan Demme set. It was called Crazy Mama. We wound up playing a bellhop. You know, they're outlaws and they're checking into the hotel and they pull a gun or something like that. And I held the line, oh my gosh, don't shoot me. And of course, my line was deleted. That way they didn't have to pay me.
That's funny.
Because that was improvised. It did get me into the Screen Actors Guild.
There you go.
Wow.
Dennis Quaid.
How about that?
Wow. Getting his start. And this is where things start to crawl a bit in the story. I don't know if you guys felt it, but because then they are trying to get Jim Bob's wife to pay the fake ransom. Eventually, mm-hmm. she discovers that he's not actually kidnapped. There's tension between Cheryl and Sean and Snake. A storyline, frankly, I just did not care about. And we just sort of are spinning our wheels a little bit, waiting to get into the finale. We do eventually get to them picking up the money from this kidnapping, and that's our lead up to the big finale. But unfortunately, on the way, we lose Bertha as she is shot by Dick Miller. A heartbreaking scene. We needed more Bertha. That's a bummer. But and we also lose Jim Bob. He is shot as he's careening down in the car. Crashing into...
I know we're not at final questions, but was I the only one that didn't see that coming?
Well,
I mean, Bertha, I guess... I mean, I figured that someone was going to be a casualty. In all of these movies, someone will be a casualty.
Yeah.
But I didn't think Jim Bob? Is it Jim Bob?
Mm-hmm. Jim Bob,
yeah. I didn't think Jim Bob would be one of the casualties. I thought that they would run off. I thought that would be kind of part of the end story.
Oh, so, I thought it was going to be one or both of the boyfriends.
That's kind of true.
Snake
yeah.
could or have been. Sean? Yeah. Was it Sean? I thought it was going to be one of those two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is Jim Bob and it is Bertha, very sadly. Though Jim Bob is shot by none other than John Milius, who is there for a split-second cameo with a rifle, simply because he was visiting the set that day, as Alan Holzman told us. He eventually writes, speaking of, The Lady in Red. It's the script he wrote for New World before he goes on and does things like Conan the Barbarian and so on. But a man who was very much into guns, who wrote Dirty Harry, of course, around that time. And, yeah, he's the one who has the rifle that shoots Jim Bob. The big ending that we have is supposed to be a lot bigger than it was supposed to be. In fact, Demi changed it from what it was originally supposed to be. He said it was supposed to end in a total bloodbath with everybody getting killed. The kids, Cloris, Leachman. And I just couldn't handle that somehow or other. But I was pissed off at Ann Southern, who played the mom, for being such an old kvetch, so I let her get killed. Everybody else escaped. We had no ending.
Wow.
Roger said, there's no ending here. So I came up with the idea of tacking on the flash forward where the family is selling burgers in Miami. Yeah, he did not get along at all. In fact, in the commentary, the most he'll say, because he's with Roger, but he just said, boy, she was tough. That's basically what he says about her. However, Ann Southern also had her say to People in 1988. She said that the feeling was pretty mutual. She said, I love the part, but we didn't get along so well. Adding, strange little man.
That is a burn right yeah, there. That's, God. You could... You could have said things a lot harsher and would not have been as effective.
Yeah, I mean, we had a big, like, bloody, you know, fight at the end of Big Bad Mama, so I can almost understand why he didn't go that way. I think he went a different way altogether, mostly because also he was rewriting the script and probably as they were going and probably falling in love with the characters or enjoying the characters and didn't want to see him go. But, yeah, it apparently Corman was quite pissed, and for a little bit... He basically canceled Fighting Mad, which is the movie he was supposed to make in all along. We'll get to more of that in a second, but he eventually, of course, he does make the movie. But at first, Corman was like, we're not making Fighting Mad then, since you changed the ending. He was pretty pissed off. But Erica, I think it's that time.
It's time for things we love. And things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about Crazy Mama. Mark, what did you love?
I loved the slow transition Snake takes from, like, he's with Cheryl. Like, Sean's getting cucked by Snake and Cheryl for the majority of this movie. Before Snake realizes he's into Bertha, and they start flirting a little bit towards the end, and even after she passes, he's the most upset that she's not with them.
The love
and
story we wanted.
That was the love story we wanted, and it's done very subtly. They don't spend much time on it, but I thought that's a real shame because that would have been something fun to explore, and if they'd started it a little bit earlier, it would have made the three of them getting in bed together a funnier scene
for sure,
because you would have known that Snake, he actually doesn't care about Cheryl anymore, he's into Bertha. They could have done more with that.
Yeah, anything more with Bertha I would have been a complete fan of, because I love Bertha. Erica,
yep,
some you agree. Loved.
Things I loved, I mean, how could you not love Dick Miller just popping up,
yes,
almost mid-movie as, you know, I guess the deputy sheriff, but also possible love interest to the wife of Jim Bob. So loved seeing him pop up, and I'll get to my favorite scene, which is also tied to that. But Yeah, loved having him pop up.
Yeah, it's such a great energy boost when you're watching a New World movie and like you haven't seen Dick Miller yet, and then all of a sudden he pops up and you're like, oh, all right, we're back in. Yeah, hey, heck yeah.
Nice. Dick Miller's here.
Fantastic. Yeah, I already said what I loved. I love Bertha. Anything about Bertha, I loved. Things we hated. Mark, what'd you hate?
I hated that Sean and Cheryl keep sharing a shirt that's a t-shirt that says property of Long Beach Poly Athletic Department.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to see this shirt, and I know many of you listening right now haven't watched this movie, and probably most of you don't even give a shit about Long Beach Poly, but the shirt is gray and the words are all in burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you know anything about Poly, their biggest rival, Wilson High School, is burgundy colors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an absolute insult to Long Beach Poly, which is gold and green. How dare they?
You have our listeners have learned a lot about Long Beach high school rivalries and also craps. Like there has been, if you are not walking away not having learned a whole lot. So you're welcome, basically, is what I'm trying to tell you. Yeah, you're welcome.
But, what the shit? I thought that is an absolute insult to Polly. How dare they?
That's fair. That's fair.
Erica, what did you hate?
She got away with it because she's cute. It doesn't matter.
He was wearing it too, though.
Yeah. He was cute, maybe? I don't know. Maybe.
Cute by proxy, yeah. I guess. Yeah,
maybe. Erica, what did you hate?
I hated the flip-flop and tone in this. It starts on that very serious note of the father being killed. And Melba's like, Daddy, wake up. And it's very serious and very sad. Then you go to this, like, over-the-top. They're about to lose the hair salon. It's a flash forward, but it's very silly. It just, it was tough to keep up with when it was supposed to be silly and over-the-top and when it was supposed to be serious. Because there, you do lose some very key characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time, the whole through line is that they're trying, Melba's trying to get her daughter to a place where she can have her child, which is a serious plot point.
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, should I be laughing? Is this serious or sad? I don't know. So I never felt completely invested in it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. And guys, I don't know, like and subscribe if you're into this podcast, but, you know, like, if I can't get seriously invested in something, like, is it even worth my time? I don't know, but like and subscribe, New World Pushers Podcast, super cute. One of the three other people is, like, super cute girl, like, you would love her, like...
I don't disagree. In fact, like if you've seen Bloody Mama, it's kind of a much more serious version with, you know, a mom and all her sons causing crimes, and then Big Bad Mama, they switch and they have a mom and daughters, and that's a little Big Bad Mama we all love. That's a little bit more fun, even though it's not particularly always funny, but it is a fun movie to watch. It's enjoyable. This one seemed to be like, let's kind of do that same idea as Big Bad Mama, but kind of make it goofier and sillier. And I think part of it, again, is, you know, he got thrown into the movie like 10 days before they were supposed to start shooting. And he's basically rewriting the script, like, as they went. And it's weird that, like, on the commentary, Jonathan Demme is being so like, oh, Robert Thumb and his script, he did such a great job. And it's like, even Francis Dole was like, Jonathan Demme did such a good job rewriting the script. So everyone knows he rewrote it, but he was trying to give, I guess, Robert Thumb his flowers, I suppose, on the commentary in front of Roger. But, it's just was such an accelerated process, which we'll get into more in the research. So let's go to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is only a couple seconds long, and it's at the wedding chapel.
Oh, my God.
When they say, okay, let's play the music.
It's the same. It's mine. That's mine.
She just turns. She doesn't even look at the record player. No. She puts her arm behind her and drops the needle on the record and just folds her arms and keeps looking for it. And I thought,
That was
I want to explore a whole movie of that woman.
Yeah. I had the exact same one. That's so funny. I was like, oh my God, are we gonna have the exact same one? I thought I'd pick something so random. But yeah, that's so funny when she does that.
So funny.
Thanks for asking, guys. It wasn't my favorite. It wasn't my favorite because I figured you two would pick that one.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, Ryan's going to love this needle drop moment.
Mm-hmm. Well.
But I already hinted at mine, so cute viewers might... cute listeners... Oh my God, I'm so cute. I forgot I was on a podcast for a minute and I thought it was
just
live.
Live on TV.
In front of a live studio audience.
Where have they been this whole episode? They are quiet.
They're super quiet. Well, they're respectful.
We have such a respectful audience.
I have not.
There they are. Oh, thank you. Thank you. God. There they are.
How cute of them to like wait until we were like respectful audience. They were like, that's us. God, you cuties.
Were they clapping for us or for themselves because we called them respectful?
Who cares? My favorite scene was when we do see Jim Bob's wife and Jim Bob's children. And she says to him over the phone, the children are just devastated.
Oh,
and they're both like...
Fighting each other.
Each other and like having fun. And they just get up and run away because they're just like playing. They're not devastated at all. Nope. They don't even care that she's on the phone. That scene cracked me up.
That's funny. All right, let's get into our final questions here. Our final questions for Crazy Mama. Why did Mama Stokes stop wearing that feather in her hair?
Oh, seriously.
That was a look.
Road trips, you know, you gotta let things go.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in the comforts of home. You don't have the same time. You're in mm-hmm. cramped quarters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have to let some things go.
Yeah.
Gotta sacrifice.
Yeah.
Do you guys think Mr. Albertson, the landlord, ever made it to his Shriners meeting?
I was imagining when his car was taken that he just got on one of those tiny motorcycles.
And just kept the little motorcycle. Felt hat on top.
Yeah, just kept the helmet. Yeah.
Like, rode it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that. At one point, like, they're dyeing Mama Stokes's hair, and I thought, do they want us to think that it's not a wig, or that it is funny that they are dyeing a wig?
That's a thing that ties back to what I hated.
Hmm.
Is it supposed to be funny or not?
Yeah. I was confused. I'm like, what do they want us to think here? Because I don't know.
Because either way, I'll get on board. I just don't know. Right? Respectful audience? Am I right? Oh, sweeties. God, you're all so cute. You're all so cute.
The woman who worked at the wedding chapel that we all loved, most of us, two-thirds of us.
I never said I didn't love her. She just wasn't my favorite scene. Okay. Calm down. Oh my God. This guy, Ryan's so extra. God.
First of all, if I saw her do that needle drop, I would have been like, okay, I need to know your name.
Mm-hmm.
But what pushed me over the edge is her sneaking into the back office and taking nips off of
looked
like a dry vermouth bottle.
That's what I was asking.
Like, is hardcore.
That's what I was asking. Was she drinking straight vermouth? I was like, my Lord. And it looks like dry. Yeah, like you said, dry vermouth.
It's dry vermouth.
Like, that is.
Yeah. But I mean, when you need to get that buzz going,
you take what you got to do. Yeah, you take what you can get. What do you think was in the bag that Bertha picked up that, you know, when they set the stage for her to take the ransom money or whatever?
Yeah, it just looked like papers, like notepads or something.
Do you think it just was like last week's Maniac when they still bothered to cut paper into the shape of dollar bills and wrap them? Even they went through a lot of unnecessary steps to just like, look, it is not money, but we're going to treat it as if it was for no good reason.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark, this is at you, but Erica, please tell me what your answer is too. But what was your favorite car from the movie?
You know, I thought about that. In fact, what I realized after this movie, or after I'd watched it, is while it didn't have a titty count, it had a car crash count, and I should yeah. have counted all of those.
Easy for me, that wood paneled, like,
yeah,
not station wagon, but what are those
Sean's
called?
Car, yeah.
Yeah, Sean's car.
The Woody.
I had a Woody for the Woody.
What a weird kink. What a weird...
Thank you, yeah, audience. Thank you.
Thank you, audience. Thank
you. You're so cute. You guys are so cute.
Well, they're being honest. It's weird. Also, they're not sure what the tone is here, Ryan. Should they laugh at this? Should they support you? Should they kink shame
you? Should.
They don't know what to do. They're not sure.
They don't know.
Should someone be like...
Maybe.
Love that wooden car, because I think I've said this before in this podcast, but in case I haven't, this is important to know about me. I used to think, growing up in the Midwest, that... Oh, my fucking phone. What is going on? Let me take it off the desk. Okay. This is an important thing. These are so cute. I forget
they
that
love
I'm recording.
The real
I
moments.
Think that you're here with me.
They
I
love
feel
the
like
real moments. The behind the scenes stuff.
Tired of the real
cut.
Moments. They're gonna get tired of the real moments. Mm-hmm. One of us keeps it too real. I used to think, growing up in the Midwest, that everyone who lived in LA drove a car like that. I just decided that. I felt like that was, if you lived in California, you owned and drove that car. That was it.
And you wore everyone had and that. You wore a drug rug.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's what I thought.
A Baja, if you will.
A Baja.
Yeah.
Yep. A Baja.
Do you think that the tone wouldn't have been so confusing if they had actually pulled off any crime with any amount of success and finesse?
Yeah. Yes, because I was like, are they succeeding?
Yeah, they're terrible at everything they're doing. They take over, they rob the grocery store. They have $40. They take all the money from the dirt bike race, but like we don't know what that is. They actually do rob a bank successfully, and yet they're still like, what do we do now? We don't have enough money. So I'm like, you guys are terrible at this. You guys should stop because you're bad at this.
When they rob the bank, Melba shoots one of the bank employees in the leg, drags her out to the sidewalk only to leave her there and get in the car and leave. Why even drag her out? Just leave.
Yeah, I don't know. She felt bad. She wanted her to be looked at first by the ambulance. I don't know. It was confusing. Let's do some quick research.
Let's not do it.
We're done.
No.
Episode's over.
God, he gets one bro dome and it's just, power hungry now.
He spits out some Happy Days knowledge and he's like, I don't think we need research anymore. I think I got it.
No. I was going to add I have a final question.
Oh, okay, great.
When I went to watch this movie on Tubi and Amazon Prime
Tubi
showed it. Showed the preview for it before you select it to start watching it as being rated PG-13, which in 1975 didn't exist.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, was this movie rated PG or rated R?
Erica, I know the answer, so let's go to you.
Oh. I think, for the time or like if it was released today?
What it was released as is I think what you're asking, right, Mark?
If you didn't know the rating and you went to watch this on Amazon Prime and it said PG-13, which didn't exist, what is it actually rated, PG or R, in your mind?
Only PG or R?
Yeah, which is all that exists. They only had it then. And G and
I think I would have to say R just because of the on-screen killings. I'd have to say R.
It was PG. The movie was actually rated PG.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Despite the fact that
I'm delicate.
You do see one of Cloris Leachman's buns. You do see Linda Pearl's boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Still PG.
You do see two on-screen murders.
And murders. Yes. And yeah, still PG. All right, research. Here we go. The commentary says that the budget was about $300,000, which is a little bit less than I think Roger has said Big Bad Mama was, which is $400,000. They had a 15-day shoot in Paris, California in April 1975. At that point in time, the movie was called, actually, The American Dream. Remember I said it was announced initially as Big Bad Mama 2, and that was like in like March or so of 1975. The movie's going to come out in July, so keep that in all in mind here. A 15-day shoot in April 1975. Now, according to the Paris Progress, they put out to the Paris residents, they said, hey, if you want to be in the movies, they're going to be filming scenes from this movie called, I'm sorry, An American Dream, not The American Dream, An American Dream, starring Cloris Leachman, and that is starting in April... April 27th of 1975. So that's when they're shooting this movie, at the end of April. They shot at the Old Valley National Bank. That's where they shot the bank scene. They wanted people to bring out automobiles prior to 1958. Paris Valley apparently is near Lake Elsinore. So they would like, if you want to be in there, head over. And they also shot at the Paris Raceway. So that's where they did all of the racetrack stuff. That's all, basically. And then they also have something else in downtown Paris taking place on May 6th, 7th, and probably 8th. So April 27th through early May, that's when they've shot this movie. It's going to come out in July. I mean, and originally, it's actually going to be titled, the original title that they tested was Crazy Ladies. And was reported by,
They should have just called it Crazy Mamas.
Yes.
They're all mothers.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And we don't really know which one's the crazy one. You can make an argument
they're all, for any yeah, of them. All three of them, yeah. It was reported by the Chicago Tribune in July 1975 as Crazy Ladies. And I even saw a newspaper ad for Crazy Ladies in Texas. Like, they were like, come see Crazy Ladies. But this is what Roger Corman said about that title. He said Crazy Ladies had a title change to Crazy Mama because of a conflict with an obscure book. We were threatened with a lawsuit. I like the title Crazy Ladies better than Crazy Mama, but even though we thought we could win the lawsuit, I just didn't want to get into court. So we had a sneak preview last night, which went very well, with the title Crazy Ladies, and this morning we're ripping out the main title and putting in Crazy Mama because we start release printing soon. From Roger Corman Interviews. So, could have been something totally different. It does open, though, in July, where it played at a particular drive-in with student teachers and Seven Blows of the Dragon. What a triple feat.
That is a hell of a triple feat.
Yeah.
I hope they got the edited version of Seven Blows of the Dragon. Not the two-hour one. That's a long time.
No, you watched the wrong one, Mark. We cannot emphasize this enough. You watched the Water Margin, which is New World did not release. You watched the wrong movie.
Pretty sure I watched the right one.
I did. Back me up here, you cute, demure audience. You're super cute.
Thank you. Thank you, crowd. By the way, Dennis Quaid wasn't the only actor making his debut in this movie. We also had Bill Paxton, who was working at the time on several New World movies in various crew capacities. But he made his on-screen debut here as a young deputy. He tells this story in Chris Nashawaty's Crab Monsters, Teenage Cavemen, and Candy Stripe Nurses. He said, I had my first ever speaking part on Crazy Mama. I was on the truck one day working as a set dresser. And then, by then, I had kind of grown my hair out. It was 1975, and I hear over the radio that somebody hasn't shown up. So Jonathan Demme says, get that kid from Texas off the art department truck, cut his hair, and put him in a costume and get him to set. I get to the set. I have one line. The car overturns, and I pop my head out. I don't even remember what the hell it was. No, I got it. It was, she don't look kidnapped to me, some moment. Yeah, that is the scene where he, where they, I think that where Snake hits the bus and it to the cop car and it makes the cop car spin over. And that was Bill Paxton lifting his head out of the car. The other thing that happened during the production that also made Jonathan Demme nervous is that his producer, Julie Corman, was very pregnant. In fact, 9 months so, and she did go into labor on set. Julie Corman mentions this in volume two of New World Pictures oral history. She says, Roger and I were having breakfast and I said, I don't feel good. I had no idea I was going into labor. I thought it was something else, like maybe I had the flu. I called the doctor and he said, you're not due for another few weeks. So I went off to the set and then I began to think, I don't think this is the flu. Maybe I should see a doctor. And it was Friday, so I had to sign the checks for the payroll. So I went back to the office to sign the checks and told somebody in the office to leave word for Roger that I was going to the hospital. Actually, I think that's
true. What a badass.
Yeah.
Seriously. What a badass.
That, I think that's actually
from... Of course, she still finished payroll and then went and had that baby. What a fucking baddie. What a baddie.
And that was their first kid, I believe. That was their first child they had. I think that is from actually Chris Nashawati's book. So is this quote, which is also from Jonathan Demme, which talks about the movie after they finished. He said that Crazy Mama went fine, but it had to be cut so fast. Roger wasn't really pleased with it, nor was I. And when it was finished, I got word that Roger wasn't really eager to go forward with fighting Mad. So I went in to talk to him and told him it was unfair of him since I had warned him that Crazy Mama might end in tears. It was unfair of him to now take fighting Mad away from me. And he sat there before my very eyes and said, you're right. It is unfair. We'll do it. That was a real moment of truth. I was really impressed that Roger changed his mind for me. And that's what he would make next. He would make Fighting Mad a nearly new world that we will eventually get to.
Not before we cover Demonoid, though.
We'll get to Demonoid. We'll get to Demonoid first, of course. Because everyone at this point is like, yeah, cool that you guys get to talk about some Jonathan Demme stuff, but we're invested in the Stuart Whitman filmography. That's what we're into. So,
yeah,
don't disappoint us. But that is it. That is Crazy Mama. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to listen to all of our episodes for March Madness 2, Let's Get Nuts, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can find all of our episodes. You can find our articles. You can find our t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt if you dare. I dare you. Buy a t-shirt. I dare you to do it.
You know,
it
would be so cute if everyone listening bought a t-shirt. Oh my god, it'd be so cute. We could all be like wearing the same shirts. Yes. Pretty sure.
We have a bunch of different designs, not just our logo, not just New World Pictures logos, but those two. In fact, we just released a new shirt. It is from Up From the Depths. You can get a t-shirt of the resort that they, the fake resort that is in Up From the Depths, which, look, maybe you've never seen that movie, maybe you'll never see that movie, but that's the deepest cut. So deep. Just appreciate how deep that cut is and buy that shirt. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody!